there's another section of the essay which I think is like quite good, and I'm like quite telling, and I'll read it now because I think it like leads work quite well to our next bit. So Rachel, you write, some potential reasons: bad mothers, absent fathers, personal trauma that has never been resolved because therapy is too hard to access, poverty, addiction issues, an unbearably hot day that fosters the overwhelming sense that no action is of any real consequence, selfishness, not doing the work, capitalism, feeling lost and directionless because life these days revolves too much around being on the computer and not enough time being in nature, being born too rich and spoiled, the pressure of being young and inexperienced ruler trying his best to lead a divided society, a sense of entitlement, a sense of superiority, a sense of victimhood, because nobody was brave enough to, quote, hold the offender accountable on the internet. These are kind of like a list of reasons that you kind of suggest that a lot of these, like how these villains are kind of framed, where these justifications or these kind of like reasonings behind why what they do, reasons like why their actions can at least be sort of like seen in a very sort of sympathetic light. I guess like the question that I have is like, it goes back to kind of how much of this comes from online, or how much do these kind of films and aspects of pop culture, how have they kind of like influenced the way in which we like interact with people online? And especially when a main character emerges and that main character is kind of like turned into a villain. Like one thing that I sort of noticed, and we've talked about on the show a bit, is how when like a main character emerges, it doesn't take that long before like people on Twitter start doing like a big like class analysis of this character, or like tries to kind of like analyze their kind of their position of privilege and why they're acting this way, because they've been allowed to get away with this privilege for so long. And like the only reason they feel so uncomfortable now is because finally they're being held accountable for it.
I think those are kind of those. I wanted to put that list together because they're all these kind of tropey things that people just say all of the time, and some of them are from books, some of them are from films, and some of them are just like the way that people speak. But I wanted to put them all together because I think it's funny when you see them all together, because it's clearly just nonsense. Like, you know, it's like they clearly, when you see them all together like that, you're like, people are literally just talking out of their hats. Like, none of the stuff is meaningful in the way that it's supposed to be. But I think Twitter really fosters this thing of people wanting to seem sort of like they're always having the take above what the mainstream take is. And I think that's where some of this sort of like kind of privilege analysis or like stuff kind of comes into, because it's basically like, y'all are saying this, well, I've got one level extra. And then it's like, yeah, then they kind of supply this like extra, which is, it's usually just like some kind of trope-ish, like, yeah. But I think it comes from this sort of thing of wanting to like have the like next level take. That's kind of where it comes in, I think.
Yeah, this is something that we were talking about in the episode that we recorded yesterday, about how the mechanisms of posting prize novelty over pretty much every other possible aspect of thought you might wish to have. So it's prized over truth, accuracy, decency, empathy, compassion. It's sort of the only thing, and that's why you get these peculiar broad consensuses forming. I wonder if the villain origin story impulse is the inevitable flip side to it's not like this anymore, but the kind of the resultant media atmosphere that was built on disclosure from precarious and like badly paid freelancers. Not so much now, but say 6-7 years ago, there was a microeconomy which was predicated on young women, mainly young women, writing about the worst thing that's ever happened to them. And that produced a kind of associated genre of posting where authority was granted by the worst thing that's ever happened to you. So you were obliged to disclose your trauma, and basically you were obliged to disclose the authority on which you had to speak about a particular subject. And not only is this to a hostile audience, but it can always be trumped by somebody else's authority, because this is how toxic deferentialism works. And I wonder if the impulse to associate bad and villainous behavior back to an explanatory instance in their young lives is the flip side to that. So if nobody is allowed to express a view or to be given the benefit of the doubt without this kind of disclosure, we also then require this from the horrible journalistic we. We also then require that from villain narratives as well. It's explanatory. It's not just why are they so bad, but it's on what authority are they bad.
I think there is a bit of truth to this in the sense that there's a very simplistic understanding of the way that trauma works that's sort of like quite prevalent in the internet. I would say still prevalent, which is that people experience trauma in a logical way. So it's like if there was a scale of 1 to 10 traumas, the most traumatic thing that could possibly happen would affect you as a 10 and the least would affect you as a 1, when in actual fact it depends so much on the person, context, whatever else is going on in your life. So this is very like kind of simplistic understanding of the way trauma works. And there's a very simplistic understanding of the way that trauma makes you behave or maps to your other behavior. So it's like if X thing happens and it's really traumatic, you'll instantly behave in Y way. And then it will have Z consequence in your life now. That's just not true at all. But it's sort of, you can see why people think it. It's kind of like putting together loads of pop psychology and sort of not thinking about your own life at all and having no introspection. But I think that understanding of kind of trauma is, and which is so simplistic and completely wrong, but it has become a sort of power on the internet. And it's become a sort of like, and it's, you even see it in the way that people narrativize, because it now has a sort of like, it's reverse engineered as well, where often when people tell about traumatic things that happened to them on the internet, they sort of back engineer it, where they discuss a lot the way it made them feel. And that's supposed to basically explain that the thing was really bad. And so that's, I think, how it's kind of evolved, where it's like X person did Y and it was so disrespectful to me. I was crying. It was the most worst thing that's ever happened to me. And I think, and that just the fact that you felt bad about it is meant to be the explanation of the fact that they did something really wrong. And that's just not true. Like, you can feel bad about something without someone having done anything wrong. But I think that kind of like the trauma map of like, I feel bad because of this reason, when that's not how feelings work, I think that is a very internet-y thing, which does totally map to this. You know, it's like, if your parents are bad to you, or if your mum is pushed off a cliff, you'll obviously be a psycho. That's just how it works, when that's not how it works. I think there's a very simplistic sort of internet trauma map, which is very dubious to me, but has a huge amount of currency and sort of power on the internet.